Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP's Dynamic Growth Program is all about capital appreciation. It's opportunistic, offers broad diversification, along with potential bear market protection. See more about any of the KPP investment programs on investtalk.com. Just click on the Investments tab. And now, today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Tuesday, March 8th, to InvestTalk. Above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is an open discussion about your money. We want to discuss it. You know, I know your parents never discussed it with you. Mine never did. But we're going to talk about it. The line is always open. You can ask questions anytime, any type of financial question. And it doesn't matter if you're a beginner or experienced investor or just any kind of financial questions that you want to know. And trust me, there's a lot of people out there listening that don't know the answer either. So don't be embarrassed about any questions that you want to ask. The line to call, our listener line, we call it the listener line, is 888-99-CHART. You can call it anytime. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're live, 4 to 5 Pacific time, so we're live right now. And you can send a note by clicking on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com. That's an email that comes directly to me, and I got one of those I want to answer on the air today. So we're going to do that. Gaining knowledge in the investment world is a never-ending process. Have you noticed that? Those of us who are older and we continue to learn and things change. Nothing is always, nothing's the same. There's always something new coming up. And the more you learn, the more you need to learn. You ever notice that? It's like exponentially grows. So it's very difficult that to understand how everything is going on and always changing. So everyone started this learning process somewhere, the journey of learning. You know, financial knowledge is something that just is very seldom taught, or you know, not very practical. That people, when you do get in a classroom, it's not very helpful. So we always try to help you with some of our books that we list on investtalk.com. We have a book list there, and we list the books I think are pretty important. And some books have been there forever, many years, because I think they're very important. There still are. For instance, one of my favorites. It's called Creative Destruction. Creative Destruction. You heard me talk about it here on the air. You know, where companies that are built to last underperform the market, and how successfully they transform them or don't transform them. That's by Richard Foster, by the way. And you've heard me talk about it many times. Turning Conventional Wisdom on its Head. The book kind of debunks the myth that high-octane, built-to-last companies can continue and excel year after year. They don't. They don't continue to grow. You know, they grow to a certain point, and many of them start to stagnate. Why? And there was research. They did a lot of research on 1,000 corporations in 15 different industries over 36 years. And they examined all these industries, old economy industries, paper makers, pulp makers, chemicals, the new economy industries, semiconductors, software. And using all these facts, the authors show that even the best run, most widely admired companies included in their sample are unable to sustain market beating levels of performance for more than just 10 to 15 years. That's it. Why? Well, it's because of management philosophies. They're based on assumptions. You have to continually change. You have to metamorphose into something else. You cannot sit still. Now, there's many, many examples of this where companies go out of business. And there's many, many examples of companies that overcome this and do transform. GE, Corning. You know, Corning used to make just dishes, right? That you can bake in the oven, glass dishes. What do they make now? Fiber optics? Is there a main product these days? What else they make? See, they had to change. Johnson & Johnson. Remember GE? GE was 60% of their earnings way back when, before the financial crisis, was in the financial industry. They were a bank. They change. So it's a really good book. Creative Destruction. It's one of my recommended books on investtalk.com. You can see it on the list. Take a look. Another one I really like that we don't talk about is Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. Really kind of a fun book to read. It's so fun. Remember the tulip craze is in there? It's got some really good, the bond debacle, the South Seas bond debacle. Anyways, there's things in there, and it kind of teaches how people just are like, can be like lemmings and just run off the cliff in one direction, not sit back and think, wait a minute, this is not reasonable. Like in the dot-com prices of companies that had no hope of ever making a penny, and they had valuations in the billions. Made no sense. Anyway, our lines are officially open for all callers. You can call right now. If you have a call, please dial the number. 888-99-CHART is our ending time number. Let's talk to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm good. How are you tonight, Steve?
Good. Thanks for the call.
I wanted to ask about X.
Okay.
U.S. Steel. It's been on my watch list for maybe a year, perhaps a little bit more even. And I was wondering maybe at this level if there might be any benefit for me to pick it up at this point where it is, either for short or long-term purposes, if now is a good level to get into U.S. Steel.
Okay, U.S. Steel is one of those companies been around forever. $1.8 billion company is not a big company, but it's been around forever, and they've lost money for a lot of years. They have very erratic earnings, and you know, like in 2014, they made $4.47 a share, but the year before they lost 77 cents a share. In 2015, they lost $1.79. This year they're going to lose $3.09, but then in 2017 they're going to lose only 73 cents. So you really can't base it, James, on its earnings because, you know, it doesn't have any. So now it's a question of, well, is it like the oil industry where it will rebound because it manufactures flat rolled and tubular steel products for the automotive container construction and appliance market? They're not going away. Those markets are not going away. But they really definitely have to turn around their business. Part of their problem is China's dumping steel. Has a tendency to dump steel products on the market, so they overproduce. Now, having said that, it certainly looks like U.S. Steel put in a bottom, okay? And that was around $6.50 to $7 a share. Then it started really taking off here recently. You know, it kind of worked its way up to $8.50, and about, what, two weeks ago, it started to really shoot up this week and last week. Well, mostly last week and the week before. So this is a good place to pick it up, James, but I would caution you to kind of wait for a pullback because it moves so fast, James. When things move this fast in just a few days, they tend to get back about half of that move, okay? So I have no problem with it as far as buying it. I wouldn't buy it because it doesn't make money, and I don't tend to buy anything that doesn't make money. But as far as a trade and as far as being able to survive, I think they will. But I would probably wait for a pullback. Insiders are buying it.
Pullback to, say, $11, $10.50.
Oh, okay. I would say about $10 to $10.50, somewhere in that range.
Okay?
Thanks for the
call. Sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, James. Now, watch. It will never pull back. And he'll say, why did you let me? But I'm just saying that tends to, when things move up very, very fast. I mean, when this went from $8.50 or $9 to $13.38 in a week, think of the percentage move that is. Huge. In just a few days. That's not normal. That's unsustainable. We all know that, right? It can't move that fast. So, a lot of commodities have done that. I think we're in for a bit of a little correction. Nothing to get excited about. Yeah. And so when that happens, that's when you pick it up. If that's where you want to be. Now, I would not recommend to buy this stock because it's not making money. The symbol is X, United States Steel Corporation. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what are we going to talk about? Do you see what the market did? I'm sure you did. It was down today, 109 on the Dow, 59 on the NASDAQ, and 23 on the S&P 500. So it was kind of a down day today, which, you know, it should. Can't go up every day. It's been ratcheting up for, you know, what, 4 or 5 days in a row, it's normal for it to give back some of that. And that's all we're seeing. Let it give back some of it. Let's see where it goes. We're going to talk about a number of things. Ultimate Guide to Retirement. You know, we have an article there. What are the risks in bonds? Three or four. We'll talk about those. And, you know, it's tomorrow's the anniversary of the huge bull market in 2009. It started March 9th of 2009. Tomorrow's the anniversary. Well, let's take a look at the numbers since then. Both the movement of the market, the GDP, the S&P 500, book value, sales, that kind of thing. I think that'd be interesting. It's an award-winning tool that we make available free to our listeners. It's an instant risk analysis tool that you can use online on investtalk.com. Just answer a series of questions and you'll be assigned a risk tolerance number to try to help guide us to how much risk you're comfortable with. 0 to 100, with 80 being about the S&P 500 risk. You can go take it. It takes you only 3 minutes. It's free. It's there in the blue box on investtalk.com.
Hey, Dave. Joe from Pennsylvania. I was wondering if South Frost Energy Partners is a good stock. Ticker symbol is SXE. The dividend yield is 191%. I was wondering if it was okay to just dump money in there, wait for the dividends to pay out, and then get out. Thanks. Bye.
No, that would not be a good thing. That's not a good way. A dividend yield that says it's 91%. I think a lot of people confuse. They think, well, I'm going to get 91% of dividend. And let's say you did get 91%. Let's say you paid it. And that you say, okay, a 91% dividend and the dollar's a dollar, the stock is $1.75, so I'll get 91%, and then I'll sell the stock and get my $1.75 per share back. That's not how it works. If it paid 90%, 91% of dividend, the stock price would go down exactly 91% the day it pays it. The day it announces that it's going to do that and pays it, boom, the stock goes down. And now you're only getting 10% of the value of the stock. Whatever the dividend is paid, whatever that amount is, the stock opens up the next day that much down. So if the dividend's 50 cents a share, the stock price will be down 50 cents a share on the opening price of the next day. Don't ever think that there's not pain involved in the dividend. And Southwest Energy doesn't make any money. Hasn't made any money since 2012. It loses money every year. It's paying that dividend out of cash flow. It's paying that dividend. It's got to have debt. It's a LMP, Southwest Energy, SXE, limited partnership that owns and operates, develops, and acquires gas gathering processing plants and infrastructure pipelines. So it's one of the pipeline companies. Now, should you be buying it? Well, for me, it's not making money and sales have been going down. We know sales are going down because prices of natural gas has gone down. So prices all across the whole area has gone down. So it's not, and it's rose sharply here. I mean, we're talking that a stock was down, you know, to very low price. And, you know, it's a $98 million stock. This is kind of a penny stock and I would be very, very leery of it. That's losing money. I don't see any reason, no fundamental reason to buy this. I wouldn't buy it. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley, and this is Invest Talk, everybody, made possible by our firm, KBP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. We're here for this hour to help every day answer any question, financial questions that you might have. So give us a call, 888-99-CHART. You can reach us directly right now.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now.
Let's talk to John in San Francisco. How are you doing, John?
I'm okay. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I would like to know if it is a good buy to buy Rio Pinto, R-I-O is the symbol.
Okay. Let's take a look at it. Rio, it's a huge company. It's a $53 billion company based in the United Kingdom. It has global interest in mining metals and industrial minerals worldwide, so it's huge. And they recently sold their Mount Pleasant Thermal coal assets, which is probably good to get out of the coal business. Those are not, that's not a growing business. Sales have been falling, earnings have been falling, but this company is still making money. It made, in 2015, it made $2.49. Now that's a far cry from $8 it was making in 2011, and even $5 it made just 2014. So this year, it's only going to make 98 cents. Next year, it's going to, in 2017, it's going to rebound to about $1.50 per share. It has a very good dividend. It has recently bottomed around $22 and then shot up to $32 and just and fell 10% today down to $28.98. So that's the kind of volatility you're going to see in this. There's a lot of volatility still. But I think it's a very well-run company, John. I do. And they have so I kind of like it, but it's going to be kind of a roller coaster for a little while. You're going to have to put up with that if you're going to buy it. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. That's Rio Tinto, symbols R-I-O, Rio Tinto. It's going to be around, and it pays a very nice dividend, and it's probably going to continue. It's got a $5 per share cash flow. There's not a lot of debt. I think the company is well run. It's a good company. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have talked about this. We even had a seminar on it at one time, and that is, what are the risks in bonds? What are the risks, the main risks? I can name 100 risks, okay? But we're just talking about the broader main risk. Okay, let's talk about inflation risk. You buy a bond, a 10-year bond, and it pays you 2% per year, which is, you know, U.S. Treasury. The risk of inflation being more than that is a risk that means you're going to make less money than inflation. Okay, so that's what inflation risk, where you're stuck in this bond for years and years, and inflation is increasing, and you're making less and less money. The opposite is true. If deflation happens, your buying power by getting that 2% is going up. You're liking that. So inflation risk is something that we know about inflation in this country, and that's what most of the time we have is inflation, and that's the risk to a bond. It will go down in value. Then you have the credit risk. Now, when you buy a bond, you buy it at par when it's first issued. So we'll say par is 100. Okay, 100. Okay, you buy it at par, and it's going to, let's say, pay you 5% interest over the next 5 years. What if, you know, 2 years from now, what if they downgrade the company that's paying you that bond, paying you the yield year after year? What if they downgrade the company to junk and they think it might go bankrupt? What do you think? Do you think your bond's going to be worth par anymore? No. It's going to be worth half that or whatever. The market determines what it's worth. If you hold it till maturity, it'll go back to par at 100 if it makes it. Then there's the interest rate risk. Same scenario. A bond that you bought at par, 5% for 5 years. What if interest rates doubles in 2 years? What would be the value of your bond that's paying half of what someone could go buy a new bond for? They're not going to want to buy your bond for par. They're going to demand less. They're going to pay much less. So that's interest rate risk. But if you held on to it to maturity, it will go back to par. So the interest rate risk will go away because your bond will return to par if you hold it to maturity. That's one of the reasons why I like holding it to maturity. Don't care what happens in between. You know, so those are some of the risks. You know, of course you have different risks involved. And those are three major risks when you're buying a bond. Try to understand how bonds work before you jump into them, because they're not as simple as a stock. You know, I had someone ask me, well, where can I look to go buy bonds? Where do I look to see where they're listed? It's not that simple, because bonds come and go. People buy them and they're off the market. Then the new ones come out, or someone's trying to sell an old bond. And, you know, it's not like a stock where its symbol is always there and you can have it priced every they at the same time. Well, bonds are very, very different than that. So it's just difficult. But there's some risks that you have to think about when buying a bond. Okay? Now, I want to talk about the anniversary of our bull market that kind of stopped last year in 2000, but is very long in the tooth. I want to talk about how it's done compared to the fundamentals of the overall market. I also want to talk about what does the smallest yield spread, you're not talking about the U.S. Treasury yields between 2 and 10-year treasuries, 2-year treasury and 10-year, the smallest or least amount of spread, the narrowest spread since 2009. What does it mean? Do we worry about that? And then I want to talk about Portugal. Are they next on the EU death page? Are they going to default? You're listening to Invest Talk. Coming up next half hour, mutual funds have style but need to conform. 888-99-CHARTER is our number. Give us a call.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast on tomorrow's Invest Talk. One way to become a more effective investor is to pay attention to what successful investors do. 3 surprising habits of smart investors. That's our main talking point on the next Invest Talk, and we hope you'll join us then. Continue now with the Tuesday, March 8th Invest Talk. History tells us that we get 10% decline at some point nearly every year, a 20% or more decline at least once a decade. Don't let the market catch you by surprise. We're here to help you stay focused on your future. Our helpline is 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Guy in Houston. How you doing, Guy?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
So, earlier this year, when S&P 500 was going down, the gold was going up. But this week, as if they are tied to each other, is there S&P goes up and gold goes up too, and vice versa?
Yeah.
Is there a way to understand that or explain this process why sometimes they move opposite and sometimes together?
Yes. Well, gold, and that's the beauty part of gold and the S&P 500. They are not tied together. One does not move up or down because the other one moves up or down. At times, they can go up and down together. At other times, they go completely opposite. And what you're seeing is gold is more tied, Guy, to the dollar, the U.S. dollar. If the dollar goes down, gold tends to go up. Okay? Remember, I just said tends. It doesn't always, but usually does. And when the dollar goes up, gold tends to go down. And you can see that clearly last year, the dollar went up strongly against other currencies and gold fell. And then right around December, when the Fed raised the rates, the dollar started to fall in value and gold started to rise. So, what's happening now with the dollar? Well, it's kind of going sideways now. So, you can't, the gold is not tied to the S&P 500 index. It doesn't move. It's more tied to the dollar. But it's not always perfect. Gold is also tied to inflation, or the expectation of inflation, and to world worry, like wars. If there's a lot of turmoil in the world, gold reacts to that, but it doesn't react to the S&P 500. Okay, Guy?
Okay, that's great. I think that explains it very well. Thank you so much. I love your show.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's just that's why I like gold, because it doesn't go with the market. It helps diversify you away from the market. Now, when I say I like gold, I like it only for a trade. I don't necessarily like it for long-term investment. It can't grow its earnings. It can't pay a dividend, gold itself. And so I'm not big on as an investment. But as a trade or as a hedge against the market, I like it a lot. And that's why we're in quite a few gold positions right now. A hedge against the market. And the dollar stopped going up. kind of thought that that big move last year. And I got too early in gold. I'll admit that. It's too early, but that's okay. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Tomorrow's the anniversary of the bull market. It started in March 9th, 2009. That's when the bear market ended and the bull market started. So today's March 8th, so it's your anniversary tomorrow. Now, you know, we Justin and I have been not the most positive on the market. And one of the reasons are that we think the valuations are not there. And let me give you an example. The sales per share of the S&P 500, how much sales those companies have had, and the annualized growth of sales since then. In other words, the companies selling their products where they earn money on, the growth of sales has been about 3% per year. The market has gone up a heck of a lot more than that. Okay, well, maybe sales are not the only important. Really, what you really want is earnings per share because maybe they cut costs and blah, 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 blah. Okay, let's look at the earnings. The earnings have gone up annualized about 10, 12% operating earnings per year. What has the market done since the bear market? And if you look at the last three quarters, earnings per share has been downgraded every quarter in the last three quarters. How about GDP? GDP, this is would be inflation adjusted. That has been growing, what, 2, 3% at the best? More like 2? How can the stock market grow so much as it did compared to sales and the growth of the economy? It can't. It cannot do that. It gets overpriced from the price to sales ratio to the price of the long-term earnings ratio, what's called the Shiller PE. Many, many ways to look at it, to the price to GDP, the value of the market to the GDP. Many ways you look at the valuations of the stock market and you say it's extended. Even though it didn't go up last year, it's still extended. Now, from a purely price to PE ratio right now, you know, the earnings estimates for this year versus the price stock, you could say that, it's just a little overvalued. It's not really that much overvalued. And from that one way to look at it, you can say that and it'd be true. But that's not the only way to look at it. So when we look at the overall market and we look at how easy money has been for so long, and the market is not cheap in many ways to look at it. Therefore, you have to say it's time to be cautious with the market. I'm not saying just get out, but it's time to be cautious. That's what I'm saying. Are you satisfied with your current retirement portfolio? Do you worry that you may be taking too much risk in a very volatile market? Well, maybe it's time for a comprehensive review. One of the services we provide to a limited number of our listeners is a free checkup. I will be in San Ramon tomorrow, March 9th, the anniversary of the bull market. And to save your time, if you want to meet with me, you have to go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting or call 888-99-CHART and just follow the prompts. William is calling from San Jose.
Hey, Steve. How's it going today?
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you. So I have a question for the stock symbol COP. Today, the crude, just seems like crude didn't do so well today, and maybe that's what caused the stock to fall 6.74%. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to get your take on this, and actually I have a two-part question. I noticed that reading some news on the stock in particular, mm-hmm. That they cut dividends as of last week from 74 cents to 25 cents. I just want to get some more education on how that affects a stock and people who buy stocks when they do cut dividends.
It's a negative thing when they cut dividends. And when you're looking at a stock for dividend, remember, dividend payers want dividends to go up. They don't want to see cuts. And what happens is you get some short-term pressure downward on the price when dividends are cut. That's a very negative thing for a stock that is known for paying dividends. And ConocoPhillips, COP, which is Gate Exploration Production, crude oil and natural gas, you know, it when they announce that, the stock gets under pressure. And the reason why it's done so well is because oil prices have really shot up recently. And now, it's, you know, William, this is a natural consequence. Today it was down big, but it gave back 6, 7% of what? A 10 to 15% move, maybe 15% move in 3 or 4 days before that, up. You got to expect it to give back about half of that before it settles down and does what it wants to do. If oil prices go down, all the oil stocks will come down with it. So it's a question of, have they gone too far, too fast? And the answer is probably yes. So I'll tell you this, about 5 days, 6 days ago, we doubled up on our COP. We doubled up, and now I'm thinking, should I take some profits on such a short-term trade? I'm not generally a short-term trader, so I still like it. I think it's just a short-term issue, but so I don't think I would sell it. Okay.
Okay, and just to follow up on the dividend feedback.
Sure.
So I remember previously mentioned that usually when companies don't do well, they usually increase their dividend to keep people buying their stock.
That's one
so
way.
In this case, is there a reason why they cut dividends?
Probably because they felt they wanted more money for research and development. They're paying about 13.6%. And yeah, they're trying to preserve as much as they can. They're going to lose $1.90 this year per share. And then next year they'll make 55 cents per share. So they probably felt that was, you know, from a management point of view, they should cut their dividend. And you and I don't know if that's a good or bad thing over time, but they don't have a lot of debt. They have some debt. And I can't tell you without reading up as to their thinking, but most likely because, you know, their earnings have gone down sharply because of oil prices, and they won't get a rebound till next year in earnings. So they wanted to not pay a dividend. Even though they have huge cash flow, they could pay the dividend. But I think that's all it is. It's nothing major. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's my number. You can call me now. Let's go to, I guess we don't have any caller. Let's do Invest Talk 101, a fund's investment objectives. And now Chuck Jaffe of MarketWatch.com said, mutual funds aren't horses. You don't pick them by the name or color or celebrity who's involved in the ownership or anything. In general, analysts look favorably on fund investment managers who maintain a consistent invested style. Okay, and because there's a style that they have. There's objectives and styles. Okay, two things. Generally, portfolio managers divide up their investment objectives into 9 different approaches or styles or categories. You know, and some are small, 3 like size, small cap, mid cap, large cap. There's 3. And then the styles, growth, value, or combination of the two. You know, you can have aggressive growth. And these are the basic styles and basic objectives, okay? So that's how you look at a fund. You say, well, is this where I want to be? Do I want to be on a growth, aggressive growth side of the market, or do I want to be more conservative of the market? Well, that's an investment decision you have to make when you talk about how much risk you want to take and what are your objectives. But what you really want to do is be able to rely on the mutual fund to do what they say they're going to do, because that's you're making a decision based on those assumptions. And they have to, you know, they have prospectus. They have to publish those. And in those prospectus, it tells you what kind of investor they're supposed to be. But surprisingly, many of them stray from their style. And you got to be very, very aware of what's going on inside there. You can see more about mutual fund styles and categories by clicking on investopedia.com. It's just below our talking point link on investtalk.com, so you can see it. And I like investopedia.com. It's very educational. That's InvestTalk 101. Now it's your turn to pick the topic. Our question and answer line is always open, 888-99-CHART.
When you're an InvestTalk insider, you have instant access to a whole library of InvestTalk webinars, like seeing the cycles, how to recognize and harness the power of market cycles. Sign up now to be an InvestTalk insider. It's free on InvestTalk.com.
888-99-CHART. I got an email today, and a question was one I want to share with everybody. from Jason. A quick question that you can answer on the podcast. Over the last few days, it really appears that the NASDAQ is gaining. However, the QQQ is lagging. I was just curious as to why the discrepancy between the NASDAQ and the Qs. And remember, the QQQ is supposed to track the NASDAQ stock index, and that's what it's supposed to do. So why can the QQQs, which is an ETF, tracking the overall NASDAQ market, why isn't it doing that? Okay, that's a very good question. First of all, make sure you look at what the Qs are tracking. It's an exchange traded fund seeking performance corresponding to the price and dividend yield of the NASDAQ 100 index. Not the entire NASDAQ, the NASDAQ 100 index. So make sure you're checking index to the Qs and staying with the same thing. Second, no ETF will ever match its underlying index that it's supposed to track, because an index has no cost to run. There's no fee. It's just tracking the stock. It's just whatever the price are. Every ETF has a fee that they charge you every year inside the ETF. So there's going to be a cost. Therefore, they're going to lag the underlying index. It's unavoidable. Number two, they also have problems with issues of buyers and sellers coming in and out of the ETF. So they're trying to buy and hold the same stocks. Well, if there's a lot more buyers coming in, they have to keep buying stocks. So it's never going to be perfect. When they have a lot of sellers, they have to sell. It's never going to be perfect. Just not. That's why. Bobby, Mountain View. How you doing, Bobby?
Hey, Steve. Thank you so much for taking my call. It's a wonderful show.
Thank you.
I just have a quick question. I've been thinking about moving into this REIT. The ticker symbol is O, Realty Income. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, let's look at it. It's a retail income group. The symbol is O. It's out of San Diego. It's a REIT that acquires retail properties leased to regional and national retail chain operators located in 49 states. It's done very well as far as earnings and growth. It's still growing, and therefore the stock has done pretty well too. So, you know, right now it's going to make $3 a share, $3.01 a share, and it's a $58 stock. So you're talking about a stock that's about a little 19 PE. It's a little expensive. Pays a 4.1% dividend. The why is it expensive? Because it's so consistent. But I do think it's a very good company. You want to buy it on weakness. If you see some weakness, I would buy it. I would, on the next dip, I'd probably buy some. I think it's a good stock. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Our Invest Talk Anytime number is 888-99-CHART. I'm here to answer your questions, any money questions you might have. 888-99-CHART. So what does the smallest or narrowest yield spread between the 2 and 10-year U.S. Treasury mean? It means the yields are squeezing, okay? So the yield of the 2-year is going up, or the yield of the 10-year Treasury is going down. The yield, the amount you're getting, what does that usually mean? What it tends to usually mean in history is that a recession is coming. And when the yield inverts, in other words, when the 2-year Treasury yield is higher than the 10-year Treasury, you're already in a recession. That's almost consistent. Now, this spread right now is the narrowest it's been since 2009. Now, I don't want to panic you, because it doesn't necessarily mean we're going into recession. There's different outside forces that are causing distortions. And this is what has been going on since the Fed has been messing around with interest rates so dramatically. The Fed is causing distortion. So the Fed recently rose in December the short-term, the overnight rate by 0.25%. The overnight rate is what the Fed... The amount the Fed charges rate that the banks borrow the money from the Fed. So that they rose it, increase it. And the fear is they're going to do it again, maybe in June. That's what my thinking anyways. So what does that mean? That makes the short-term rates go up. At the same time, on the long-term rates, Europe with its negative rates, Japan with its negative rates on their federal debt, are driving those investors to the U.S. because at least you can get some positive returns from 10-year treasuries that you can't get in, let's say, Germany or the Netherlands or Japan. You can't get in there. You got to pay to buy their debt. So why wouldn't you want to buy long-term U.S. debt that pays you 1.5%, 2%? You would. So that's driving the demand for those 10-year bonds here in the U.S. is high, driving the yields down. Whereas at the same time, the cost of short-term treasuries, 2 years, is going, the yield is going up because the Fed is raising rates. So it's kind of like an artificial squeezing, not as a normal squeezing as a result of an economy that's in distress. We don't have a economy in distress at this point. So now you go, well, how do I interpret this? Well, you can't just interpret it like you could in history when it's happened before, because we've never seen this done before with the Fed so aggressive in managing interest rates. Yeah, they always have been they always have risen or lowered interest rates, but not this aggressively like they've done this time around. So it distorts everything. So I wish I could tell you that because the spreads are squeezing, we got to be watch out for a recession. I do think we have to watch out for a recession, but it's not because of the spreads are squeezing, and it might not happen this year. Maybe next year, maybe the year after, but I don't know. There's other worries for this year. It's a never-ending learning process, as we started the show off with telling you that you have to constantly learn. Let's give the last word to Ray in Brea. He called our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART. Hi, Ray.
Good afternoon. Hey, could you explain return on equity, why it's important, what it is? I know it's a valuable tool, but I don't completely understand it. Thank you.
Okay, well, Investopedia.com will give you that ROE, ROA, return on assets, return on equity, and the difference. And simply put, the company has assets, and we call that equity, okay? They can have it by borrowing money. They have it by the money they have in the bank. They have it by the value of their company and stock price. And the question is, what kind of return do we get on all that value? What kind of return? And you can kind of think of yields. You know, what kind of yield do you get on a bond? You get 3% yield? What do you get? Well, return on all the assets, all the properties a company owns, all the assets they have. What's my return? What am I getting? And I like to get 17% or higher. And that's what that means. It's the value of the company and how much is it thrown off in future value. Now, it can be misleading because it includes debt. And if you borrow more and more money, you have a higher assets called because you borrowed it. So you got to be careful. Our time is up. A reminder that if you have a question you'd like to ask me directly, you can send me a note by going to investtalk.com and clicking on Contact Steve. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, I want to thank you for listening today. And you know, we can do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.